typically we don't start with any sort of an intro. We just start talking crap, and then I figure out where we can start editing. Why don't we do this? Why don't we do an intro with everyone, just a real quick, so that they can figure out whose voice is what. Why don't you start, just so that everybody knows who you are?
All right, no problem. So this is Ben. I talk a lot of shit, and I like to think a lot about, you know, skate stuff and what can be done to improve it. The problem is I'm typically pretty short-sighted on it, so I don't see some of the problems that are out there, but, you know, I can definitely appreciate, you know, people that can do that, and I'm really leaning on you guys to show me some of those shortcomings that I think of. So, but I'm, you know, one of the hosts of the Back to Blading podcast, and an infrequent rollerblader here in New Jersey. So, that's me.
Awesome. You gonna go, Mark?
Sure. I am Mark Sundell. I live in St. Paul right now. I've been aggressive skating since 1996. I've been on skates since I was in second grade, so that was probably around 1982. So I love rollerblading.
Wow.
I have a history or a education in industrial design and manufacturing engineering technology. I was lucky enough to be able to design some products for Kaiser and USD, actually. So that's me.
Awesome. And this is Lawrence. Grew up skating in Alameda, California. Played ice hockey since I was about 14. Started rollerblading when I was about 16, I guess, as more of a cross-training function for ice hockey when you couldn't get out to the ice. And then one thing led to another, and we started jumping off stairs. Also was one of the owners of 50/50, which was a skate company in the 90s that made aftermarket products for rollerblades, mostly frames and grind plates. Was also heavily involved with the development of UFS, and was one of the few companies that had a UFS frame at the beginning of UFS. So kind of a seen the beginning of the frame evolution. And took a step out from skating about 15 years ago, 2003 or so, and got back into it last year. And I've been chronicling my journey back into blading on the Back to Blading YouTube channel and Instagram and with the podcast with Ben. So we decided, so we had some thoughts around frame technology, and one of the things that Mark, Ben, and I do is kind of sit and chat on Facebook group chat about what's cool and what's not cool about frame tech, skate tech. It's really nerdy. And we got to thinking about, you know, what would be cool if we could design a brand new frame. And rather than designing the frame, that conversation kind of matured to, well, what is the problem that we're trying to solve? There's a lot of frames out there, and a lot of the frames are using workarounds to get through the limitations of UFS. So rather than try to discuss the UFS standard and how to fix it on Facebook chat, we said, hey, why don't we do a podcast so that we can talk with each other using our voices instead of text, and record it so that we can put it out there and share it with the blading community and get some conversations started.
I think so. We have documentation for when, you know, we actually saved rollerblading.
Exactly. So yeah, rollerblading is coming back, and we, this is the moment in time. So we're recording this at 10:21 Eastern on November 18th, 2017. And mark that time in history. So what we wanted to do was we wanted to go through some of the history of UFS that led up to UFS, I should say. You know, rollerblading has been around for many, many, many years. I think the and Mark can probably correct me since he's been doing it longer than anyone. But the first rollerblade brand skates started hitting the market in early 80s, probably 1981 is the earliest that I've been able to see.
I would say 81.
So how were those skates? So first of all, what were the skates that you had? Like,
I had a pair of Ultra Wheels.
Okay.
It was that lightning boot, and they had that weird metal frame where it like was like two pieces, and it had a whole bunch of axle, like the axle holes like went all, like the whole length of the frame.
Oh, I remember those.
Yeah.
I never skated them, of course, but I think I've seen pictures.
But I mean, I was in second grade. So, yeah. I mean, it's hard to like say, like, you know, with the experience I have now comparatively, but I mean, they were basically a pair of lightnings. I mean,
right.
That, so.
Yeah. And so, I mean, skate technology really didn't change. I think the frames changed a little bit. I remember, you know, the chassis, I'm sure they called them back then, used to have, you know, three wheels, or it would have four wheels, or it would have like multiple axle holes, right? So that you could stick the wheels in wherever you wanted. They would have, I remember the TRS. So my first skates were Rollerblade Zetra 303s. And they were, I'm sure they allowed for rockering. But the rockering was this, it's not an ellipse, but it's kind of like a pill shaped, like a capsule. So you would rocker them up or down, and that was really the limit of the rocker. And for roller hockey, it was great. You know, we would rocker our wheels, probably flat 72, and skate around. But then when we started doing aggressive, you know, we would flip those rockers up. We would ride the smallest wheels that we could so that we could grind. And that was really it. I mean, that was the pinnacle of skate technology for many, many years. Mm-hmm. What was your first skate, Ben?
First skate that I had, it was a big box brand, single piece injection molded, three buckles type thing. Well, actually, that's not true. That's the first skate that I grinded in. Hacked off the brakes, took the middle wheels out, and skated freestyle like crazy.
Oh, nice.
The very first skate that I had was probably like a Veriflex or California Pro or something like that, like real soft plastic, full lace up all the way up, hot yellow or hot neon green wheels, you know, poorly fitted and not tight enough. So like my wheels were coned like crazy, but
that's awesome.
Like, I can still remember skating that skate around my neighborhood. It's 29 Palms, California. Hot as balls, nice. Still wearing jeans.
yeah.
But and there was I had a very specific I don't remember if it was a dream or if I was describing this to Emily while I was trying to get her to get to sleep one night. But there's like a cul-de-sac that all the base housing was on.
Mm-hmm.
You'd go down the sidewalk and then there was this huge hill. I remember it being huge. It might have been fucking 25 feet, but like
right. There's
a big hill and you can coast most of the way down to the elementary school that they had just built on the base. And I remember skating to school more than a couple of times as a kid and just having a blast rollerblading to school and then putting my skates in my bag and just like, just thinking like, oh, I got to skate up that hill later.
That's so awesome. But yeah. And they were mounted just, I mean, standard, right? They were just riveted on, no big deal.
Yeah. Those were riveted. And then the you know, shipbox molded ones that I had, it makes perfect sense why I'm skating Aeons now,
right?
Because that's basically what I started out on, so I may as well be on a full mold.
Were they actually, were the frames molded in with the boot? Was it all one piece?
Yeah, it was. Nice. Everything was, it was one whole piece. The frame, the boot, the cuff, it was all one piece. There was no articulated cuff, nothing like that. It had like flex points that were molded in or the cutout. So, I mean, it was, I found a picture of it at one point, and I think I sent it, Mark, to you and Eric in one of our group chats back, you know, way back when. But I mean, I've had so many issues with my phones. I don't know what the hell happened to that picture. I'll have to try to find it again.
Sure.
But
yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah, I mean, I think skates were like that forever. You know, there was really no change. The first, so there were, outside of aggressive and outside of standard rollerblading, there were some innovations with the speed skating market. So probably around the early 90s, there was a speed skate evolution where, you know, they would use speed skate boots, and it was essentially just a standard speed skate ice skating boot that had a 165 millimeter mount, where you would just, it was probably a quarter inch bolt, and you would mount the frame for ice skating to this 165 millimeter you know, separated mounting area. They would use those boots, and they would create frames that were 165 millimeter, but with five wheels, probably only five wheels. I would imagine that anybody with that sort of custom frame back then was only rocking five wheels. And I'm sure those wheels were probably 80 millimeter. I mean, they probably weren't very big. Did any of you ever have speed skates?
No.
I've never seen them in person.
I've never owned a pair, but I skated a pair of ice speed skates when I was a kid. Like when I started, I had tarmacs at the time, so shortly after I started, like, really aggressive rollerblading.
Yeah.
But my grandmother had a pair that I could squeeze my foot into. They were a little tight, but I skated the shit out of those things, and they were a lot of fun. And interestingly enough, with that long blade, I have no idea how long it was. It was like, if I had to guess, it was probably close to like a 295, maybe 300.
Sure.
Yeah, they were long. Tip to tail. It wasn't short at all, but it felt reminiscent of skating anti-rocker. Like I remember thinking, I was like, this feels exactly like my tarmacs.
Interesting.
Because of the lack of maneuverability and everything like that.
Right.
So that was how I equated the two. Clearly, it was much, much faster, but
yeah.
I mean, it was on a lake, you know, by my grandparents' house in Colorado. So it's not like it was a, you know, a Zamboni'd, you know, rink or anything like that.
I gotta say, as a hockey rat growing up in California, I've always been jealous of y'all who moved out and were able to just skate in the middle of winter wherever the hell you wanted. Like, we would just, I mean, that's why we rollerbladed, right? Because we didn't have access to ice. We, you know, we would have to drive 30 minutes to Berkeley, which sucked. And it was expensive. I mean, every time you go out to skate, it was like $10. It was not, it was cost prohibitive and time prohibitive for us to go out and skate. So, I mean, thank you. Like, I'm glad that we were able to roll and start rollerblading. I have a lot more fun doing that than playing hockey, but I've always been jealous of having a pond. I've never played pond hockey.
Yeah, well, if it makes you feel any better, I haven't either. And
fair.
So I have. I'm from Minnesota. Of course I have.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, Mark probably grew up on the pond.
Yeah, and if it makes you feel any better about it, Law, the last time that I ice skated from after that was last winter.
Oh wow!
You know, at Bryant Park in New York City. So it was a solid, like,
it's been a
20 plus years.
That makes sense
between my ice skating. But I mean, if I really decided that I wanted to get into it, I would go whole hog. I would definitely get into it.
Right. So those were the two paths. So we had riveted frames that were riveted to basically the rollerblade boot, the boot that everybody is familiar with, the Rossi's boot, the rollerblade boot, you know, that standard boot. And then we had these speed skating options that really were just a crossover from ice speed skating. There's one that we didn't talk about. We prepped a little bit for this and made a list. And one that we didn't talk about that I think is worth mentioning is the Rossi's Vert frame. the lowrider frame. I don't remember. So this is the frame that if you ever saw the hoax that Mark Heineken was skating, and it's an aluminum frame that mounted to what I believe, and I don't have a pair, but I'm sure we can find something that can confirm this. I believe mounts using probably 165 as its front and back distance. There was a bit in the hoax where he broke his frame bolt and he spun the frame around and he was like, why does stuff break or something like that? That's an interesting mounting system. So it was probably just a riveted on base plate, but the base plate then had two holes with some sort of a threading that you could mount the frame on. It's interesting that never took off or never went anywhere.
I Googled a picture of it real quick, and it looks very great minds, right? So I'm looking at that, and I think that's exactly what they have going on there. But I'm not seeing anything with the oh my god, there's an Eddie Rocker setup.
I'm looking at it. It looks like a hockey frame.
Yeah,
like it looks like a repurposed hockey frame.
Yep, but with a grind plate.
Yeah, and they just wrap around. They added that on there. Yeah, like it would make sense. It's a reuse of parts. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you know what? I might be able to get somebody to send me a quick picture of that. Like, give me a second.
I would be really interested in the mounting. It doesn't have to happen now, but I...
Because if you look at that, the front part of it, there's like a base plate, like the 50-50 plate.
Exactly. Yeah. That was mounted to it, and then this might be the first aftermarket frame that was...
But is it aftermarket if it comes on the skate?
It can be purchased separately, and it's built for aggressive. I think you could buy replacement chassis, like the base plate and frame, but then you're dealing with rivets, so you have to drill out the friggin' rivets and put in new rivets, and good luck, you know, doing that at home.
Yeah.
So this was probably the first that was that a user could actually replace by themselves without having to go to a skate shop. I don't know why you ever would, but I mean, it's not like you're going to grind down the aluminum frames. Yeah.
Did those come out before the Majestic 12?
They were probably out before the Majestic 12 because they were in the hoax. Okay. So this is probably like 1993. Yeah. I know the Majestic 12. I remember I was at the NIS, the San Francisco NIS, and that was probably 95. And somebody had them there. It was like Dave Kolosh or somebody. And that was when I think the Majestic 12s came out. And the Majestic 12s weren't much. I mean, it was a newly designed frame, same boot. But it was a newly designed frame that had a bit of a split. It had an H block. That was the big progression from the Majestic 12. So it had a split, it had an H block. It was definitely designed for what we do. Maybe even had a big groove.
I remember seeing in catalogs that you could buy that frame.
Exactly.
Yeah, aftermarket. So
They had that frame in the Team Paradise catalog that you can find online with Vinny Minton, or not Vinny, Ernie Villarino, is that his last name?
Italian Stallion.
The Stallion, yep.
Doing a torque sole on some rail.
Backslide, and you know it.
So I did a little research, and I found that the next skate... things started getting really interesting around the mid-90s, mid to late 90s. You know, there was a lot of money being thrown into it. A lot of, you know, Rollerblade was really pushing it. I'm sure this is when Airborne came out, which was, you know, the movie that probably painted the best picture of aggressive skating. The Prayer of the Rollerblades came out before then, but it was kind of
a... Do the rope.
Yes, Stay the Rope. It was kind of a weird, like, mismatch. There was some jumping of things, but there wasn't any grinding or anything like that. No vert skating or anything. And Airborne definitely had a little bit of everything. Even though the grinding was very limited, it was like, what are you doing?
But it was still a Hollywood movie.
It was a Hollywood movie. It was a big release. It was incredible. So around 1995 is when a lot of the stuff started coming out. That is when the first K2 Fatty came out. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
Like, that's a long time ago.
That skate was stupidly ahead of its time.
Oh, my God.
Like,
it was incredible.
Yeah.
So I skated fatties for a little bit. I could never get a pair. I think I borrowed a pair, and it was like a size 9 or something. So I would always stub my toe in those skates, but I loved them so much.
K2 toe. That was the worst.
Did you ever skate Mark? I had a pair.
I got them for my senior year. That was my second pair of aggressive skates.
Awesome.
First pair were a pair of boxcars.
Oh, nice. Yes.
Yep. But yeah, those skates were amazing. So
they were the gray ones, right? Not the pros or the regular ones. Okay.
Nope. The first set. Yeah.
So I remember distinctly I wish that I remembered them better, how they skated. I remember backslides and royales being really easy because you would grind and it would be so slow that you could kind of, I mean, the famous picture I'm sure is the Jason Marshall, the backslide on that 20 stair rail with his shirt off and his arm all like the perfect pose of the boned out backslide, you know? Yeah. And that was a K2 fatty. Like you could just kind of sit on a rail and just slide on down, take your time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember much about the frame. What I do know is that it was a single mount. Like it was a single piece. There was no replaceable frame.
There was a replaceable H block.
Yes.
Which was really weird. And because it was kind of like the first generation ground control one.
Okay.
But like it had a tiny, tiny, tiny little lip. Like it was the weirdest thing to replace.
Because
I bought a replacement set and I put it in and it was just weird because like I had already ground past the point. So it was
right.
It didn't line up, but the first, like I could draw those frames from memory. Like they were great frames because they had the bevel.
Oh
like,
yeah.
On the balance frame.
They did. Yep. Exactly.
They had recessed bolts. They were like flat skates.
Amazing.
Stupid amazing.
The sole, I mean, that was the first that had the flat sole.
The flat sole, yeah.
So I
remember those were when like my friends making fun of me that those were cheater skates because the soles were so huge.
Yeah. And like, now I mean you look at them and it's comically small, right?
Yeah. Yep.
They were way ahead of their time. It was a soft boot. It was like I'm sure you couldn't replace anything, like maybe the cuffs. But everything else was like this molded, glued thing. But that was, you know, for many, many years, and even now, one of the best skates of all time. I mean, it was the most progressive. It was, like you said, light years ahead of where
they had
technology was.
Single tool axles.
Yeah, that's true.
And six-way rockers.
Six-way rockers, which they still have.
Metal rockers, like because I broke so many rockers on my boxcars, like
that would never happen on a fatty.
No,
it would happen on a backyard bob though, because those had plastic frame spacers.
Yeah, they did. But that was when you could like upgrade them. I remember buying a hop up kit.
They would have metal everything.
Frame spacers,
they even had metal wheel spacers, right? Because it was like that would
that
make
was
a difference.
The big sell,
but
that was when people used nylon.
Of course,
or wheel spacers.
Because why wouldn't you?
But who made it? Was it Grizzly or was it the Boss one?
I mean, I don't even remember. Either one.
Yeah,
so great. So that was huge. That was, and a lot happened around 1995, but I think the fatty was the big change. That's probably when the Argons came out, the Oxygen Argons. Around that time, maybe a little earlier, maybe a little later. I'm sure Ben has some opinions on that.
I do. Argons came out around about the same time, I think a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But they were all very much in the same era.
I couldn't find any information on the release. I had to go deep into news groups to find the original K2 Fatty release. It was 1995, so the Argons probably around that time as well. The Argons were a standard traditional skate. You know, it was a plastic shell with a frame that mounted to the bottom and a liner that sat in the inside. The difference with the Argons, not only did it have, I mean, you can tell me all about it, Ben, but they had soul plates, they had frames.
Yeah, they had the frame was mounted with a weird nylon anti-rivet that screwed in with a if memory serves, it was like a brass coated or like a weird galvanized screw that would always have corrosion on them because you would sweat so much in those dumb skates, but it had there was 12 screws that would hold those frames on, three on each side in the front, three on each side in the back. Nope, I'm wrong. Was it two in the back?
I think it was two in the back, just from a space perspective, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, on the safe side, I'm going to say two, but I feel like there was three, but only two held in the heel sole plate. That's not terribly important, but yeah, I mean, like, as far as I was concerned, up until, like, 95 or 96, I think that was probably one of the best skates that was available.
No doubt.
Because, you know, they were tanks and they would last forever.
Yep.
And people like me that didn't have money to buy new skates all the time could skate them for 2 years and, you know, hope my dad was going to spend $40 on a new pair of frames for me.
Yeah. And that was the big differentiator. You could buy new frames. And that was probably the first one that was available that was not an aluminum, like, you know, thinking back to the Rossi's Verts, the first frames that were plastic that you could grind through that you could replace as easily as replacing wheels or bearings or, you know, grind plates or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I like about those frames is the built-in grind plate design, the inset.
Oh, yeah, that recess.
Yeah.
Smart. I mean, they were smart skate.
And the 50-50 grind plate and the Senate wrenches fit perfectly in that little recess.
There might be a reason for that. Just saying. That the original metal grind plates that 50-50 made with the powder-coated ones, the steel ones, did not fit in there. And then when the plastic ones, the UHMW, you know, iconic plastic ones were being designed, we happened to have some skaters who rode Oxygen, and we wanted to make sure that they would fit.
Yeah. Other than Champion?
Probably not. I think Champion was the guy, but I had a friend, Nick, who skated Oxygens, and we knew that it was a market, and that Oxygen was a skate that was out there that had a recessed area that we needed to accommodate.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
CDS went so far as to change the way that they made their plates. Like, they made the notchback version.
And then I remember those.
Yeah, and then when the new frame came out that had, like, the split, the longer split, they had the long, easy grind plates that they came out with.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, you've got to. And there weren't that many. That was the nice thing about the market back then. There were only a few skates that really, skate variations that really you had to worry about if you were a grind plate maker, you know? It was really K2, it was Oxygen, and then it was everything else had flat. I mean, it was, you know, the Majestic 12s were completely flat. What was Rossi's doing back then? Oh, that was the Majestic 12. Rollerblade had the
box cars.
Box cars, yeah, and they had the Chris Edwards.
Chocolates, Troopers, yeah.
Yeah, Tarmac. Exactly. And those were flat frames. They might have a little bulge, but it wasn't anything that grind plates needed to worry about.
Yeah. The original ones, like the first Tarmax, had some nubbies and stuff like that on the frame, but they were very much they were probably very easy to design around.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever having to adjust grind plates or grind anything down on my frames to accommodate, but when they came out with the second version, like the frame that came on the boxcars was the new like Zytel enhanced frame or whatever it was, but still riveted, and it had the like there was two little nubbies that were on the base plates kind of things. But that was the new street frame, I guess, or whatever it was. You know, probably wouldn't be difficult to find a picture of that for the show notes, but
yeah, we'll find it.
That was that was when they were starting to come with the black hole wheels and scribe grind plates and stuff like that. So, but yeah, that was that frame, like in that spot for grind plates, it was very flat.
Right.
But I remember when the original Bauer front sides came out.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about the Bowers too.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Do you remember how those mounted?
It was more or less like the same thing.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Probably the same riveting, but the very original ones, when I started seeing pictures of those in like Inline Skater magazine and stuff, it had the old F3 frame that was on there. They had all the crazy little bits and bobs and stuff that were molded into the frame. So, like, I don't know what people did for grind plates with those, or if they were just like, fuck it, I'm going to get through it, and I'll buy some new skates.
I'm sure they didn't, yeah. I mean, if you were spending money to ride Bauer, you probably weren't in the know.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like, I still kind of want to try some Bauer Shifties and and a pair of Bauer Civilities, whatever.
Get your camo pants and camo cargos, and you're good. So,
well, see, my... Now I still feel like I have to justify myself with this. The reason why I wanted to try those is because I felt that Bauer would make a great product because they're such a respected hockey brand.
Yes.
So you know what? It can't suck as far as like the way that it's going to fit and feel.
Sure.
That part can't suck.
I mean, Sam Fogarty skated Bauers forever.
Yep.
And until he started skating Rossies. And he was fine. I mean, again, it's hard to say what the quality of products are when you put them on professional skaters. You could make anything look good.
For sure.
So, I don't know the timing on this one, but the Razor's flat was around that time and probably one of the only systems aside from maybe the Fatty, that's still in production now. The flats, I'm assuming, were probably around 95, maybe 96, but they were as you see them now. They had the standard rollerblade Rossies boot, with a standard liner, right? The plastic boot and the regular liner, but they had this sole plate, which provided a flat sole. It provided a backslide plate, and while it wasn't flat, it had a slight heel raise. It did have a way to replace frames.
Did the flat have that like Senate like first Kaiser frame design with the four nubs on that away?
I think they did. I think that was the standard that they were going for, and I'll have to do some research to find out how those frames mounted. But that might be, the oxygen definitely was. It's a toss up. I don't know the timing, but I would assume that the oxygen came out first. But that might be the first real replaceable frame, the Razor's flat. And I don't remember much about them. I know that I skated them briefly. I thought they were fine. But I mean, clearly that design, having that base plate, that sole plate that you mount onto a boot, whether it's riveted, those were probably screwed on, with a backslide plate that's replaceable and then a frame that's replaceable. That was it. Those are the three pieces that you see now on many, many, many skates. So definitely.
Yeah. Was that the first skate to do that?
As far as I can remember,
a sole plate and a frame.
As far as I can remember, yeah.
Huh.
I mean, around that time, all there was the oxygen, the Fatty. There were Rossies and rollerblades, but they didn't go through that replacement sole plate. The next rollerblade skate, funny enough, was the Dirk.
Yeah.
And the Dirk was a complete direct new direction for frame design and skate design. I mean, they didn't have. I want to say there was a Eric Schrein interview, maybe on Truespin podcast, where he was talking about the design of the Dirk. And I want to say that around that time, because Rollerblade took longer to design things, you know, they went through, they made quality products. And not to say that Razors doesn't make quality products, but Rollerblade definitely sweat the details and took forever. Like, things moved much slower for Rollerblade to design new products than they did for Razors. I think Razors was built for speed and making color changes and making product changes really quickly. And as a super nimble, like, startup-y company, Rollerblade, yeah, there was definitely more steps that they had to go through to get things approved and get things produced. The Rollerblade Dirk was an incredible skate that was, if you were in a closet, right, and you had to design a skate and you had no idea of the outside world, I don't know how you would come up with that. I mean, that was a bizarre design.
It was. Now, there was a workaround that Rollerblade did before the Dirk. So between the Boxcar, Chocolate Trooper, and the Dirk, they had a replaceable sole plate that would do, they would add to the sidewall of your frame and also would protect the rivets on your soles.
Oh, I never knew about that.
Yeah, so
it was garbage. It was the worst thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you mount it?
On the axles, the frame axles. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It was a good idea. This was something that I think that they had to do, like, shit, we got to have something to put on our skate now.
Yep.
So then we can continue to have, you know, positive revenue flow so we can, you know, make the Dirk or what's
sure,
next.
Sure.
So let's throw this out there. And that's when I saw the Dirk for the first time, that was the first thing that I thought of. It was like, these soles are exactly like this garbage sole that they put out on the Chocolate and the Trooper.
Interesting.
But it was made so much better because it was integrated into the frame. So,
huh. Yeah, I mean, so the Dirks are very much an extension of the TRS, of the Chocolate, of the standard, you know, like the Majestic 12 style. They had that little fin for, like, at the heel, and there was, you know, a gap with a little groove area for your backslide, but it wasn't a flat sole. You know, the heel was a little bit higher. Maybe it was flat, but it definitely wasn't consistently flat. And the fin, like the heel fin, would just kind of slide out a little bit. It was a very interesting design. It was like they designed it before they realized that sole tricks were a thing.
Yeah, they designed it so you're actually literally grinding on the boot material.
Yes, precisely. Like. Which, I mean, it's fine. You know, a lot of skates back then were like that. But it's interesting that they came out around the same time as the Razor's flat.
But, yeah, and the Fatty was out already by then.
Yeah, for sure.
So
for sure.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, I had like three pairs of the Dirks. I loved those skates. Like,
they skated,
everybody great, had those skates.
And the reason that they skated great was because they were solid. So the way that the frame mounted was a really weird thing. Instead of just being like a flat, like you're used to UFS, right? So with UFS frame mounting, it's a flat frame. And then there's two little nubs, and you put the nubs, the frame on the nubs, and then you bolt them in, and you're done. The nubs are 20 millimeters in diameter. Jesus. The Dirks had this crazy, like, almost like a, like if you were imagining going to a putt-putt golf course and trying to get it in the volcano. Like, it had these three big old mounds like that. And there
but they went in through the boot.
Yeah.
Not in through the frame.
Exactly. So the mounting area was, and you had to take the whole thing out, screw them down, and then the frame mounted into that. It was, I mean,
it and was they were Torx head.
Were they Torx? They were Torx
head, yeah. Because I had to go find a special screwdriver, and I bought a freaking screwdriver so I could tighten my frame bolts.
What size was it?
I don't know. Probably 35. It was huge. It was big. Wow. I
they were big. They were, yes, big.
Yeah. They were, yeah. And, yeah. There's a lot of hardware on those frames.
We used to,
the plastic spacers and then the metal walls and then, yep, the long ass bolts. Those were wide, wide frames.
Super they right. Were, yeah. The, yeah, the rockers, though, they used this, like a sunburst. I don't know what they called it. But you think
no, the Dirks and the CI5s, they were diamond shaped.
Diamond.
And the Dirks had them on the edges and the corners, okay. And then the CI5s had them on like the flats. So they were the X and the Y rockers. They were pink and blue, like nice. Boys and girls.
Oh, good, of course.
And I like how I remember this.
I totally remember it too.
Yeah, the pink ones. You would ride them out, and you could get 55s in them. And the CI5s were the blue ones, and you could fit 59s in them. Interesting. Flat.
So, do you remember if Daytonas came with both sets of the?
Did they? Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Did okay. they? Interesting. What were the frames? I have a recollection of frames that had like a star sort of mount that you could kind those of came, twist them around.
Those came later. Those were okay. the Speedster ones, and you okay. could go up to like 72 or something yeah. stupid. Like they were ridiculous. Huge.
Extremely yeah. customizable. I would say.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So that was something. We used to mount 50-50 frames on them. And it would require a lot of work. You know, you would take the frame off, and you would use a belt sander, and you would sound yep. down that hump, and then, you know, rivet on the base plates, cutting off the fin. And it created a really nice skate. I skated them for a while, and I really, really liked them. The thing with the boot was it was a very wide boot, so my foot fit in really comfortably. But man, you know, that was as far from a standard as you could possibly get.
That's how the Spicer skate should have came with a 50-50 frame. That would have been amazing.
Don't think we didn't try, but yeah, we couldn't even get grind plates on those things.
That's because the split was so wide, right?
No, I mean, it would work, but it was just trying to deal with Rollerblade Corporate. I think they were able to get... wheels on, but did they come anti-rocker with the Crayolas?
Yeah, they had. Yeah, no, they had the oh, the second, yeah, the and second, the yeah. Arlo's on the outside.
Right, I think that was the only OEM part that he was able to get.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
So yeah, so that was the Dirk, and that was a big deal. I mean, that probably came out and lasted a long time for Rollerblade. I mean, they didn't do anything new with frame mounting until. I mean,
till UFS.
Yeah, Mark would know until UFS, which was probably 5-6 years later. And no, didn't have UFS boot in the beginning either.
Well, what about the paws? Did they have that same type of
that was the same the okay. Dirk or the Speedster one?
Okay. Yeah, I never actually held a pair of those in my hands, to be honest with you.
I don't know that I've ever heard of them.
I owned some for 5 minutes. They were the most uncomfortable skate I've ever had. I had to return them. That was when you could return them because you actually bought them from a store.
Yeah, they had them at stores.
Yeah.
So around that time, there were so that was around 96. I wrote down 96 for the Dirks. 97 was, I think, the first time that aftermarket frames built for. Skates that were not skate companies started hitting. So the Senate frames first came out, and then shortly after the 50-50 frames came out. I remember the Senate frames launching at the NSGA show, which would have been 97 in Chicago. And I think that 50-50 had some samples, but we were not shipping. They were shipping first. So Senate definitely won the race to get to the first third-party aftermarket replaceable frame. Those Senate frames, man, they were something else. Not only did they have base plates and frames, but they had a brand new 30-millimeter wide wheel. So do you guys remember this?
Yeah.
I very much remember these, yeah. I wanted them.
How crazy is that?
Real bad.
Did they do that at the launch?
No, I think the 30s were after that, and I don't know that the 30s lasted very long. I want to say there were some problems with the frame walls being too thin,
okay.
But I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah, I've never seen anybody skate them in real life ever.
I've never seen them in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen pictures, but that's really it. I don't know that they ever made it to.
Wouldn't that be production. Funny if they nobody actually ever skated them? They never actually came out. It was just that, like, everybody assumed that it came out because there's pictures of them.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure
because that's what everybody says. It's like nobody's yep. nobody's ever seen them.
I'm sure Bhutan is skating them. See, well, I can make stupid jokes like that, and you guys totally get it. Like, nobody else is going to get that.
No, and look, we're not going to explain it either.
And if you don't, maybe if you don't get it, stop the podcast right now because you're not going to like the rest of the podcast.
But yeah, like I remember. I don't know if it was Team Paradise that offered those, like, before they went under or whatnot. But like, I really wanted some of those 30mm Senate frames. Like, I'm not 100% sure what it was.
Nope.
But I know there were someone that was a relatively big name that said that he skated to them and liked them.
Okay.
And it wasn't Arlo, because Arlo had them on a pair. I want to say on a pair of Thrones, but then probably went back to whatever
sure.
you know, the 24mm one was. But I really wanted to skate them. I just I didn't want to have to hack apart a pair of skates and find out it wasn't going to work.
Well,
and then be ass out.
I mean, it wasn't really well thought through. I mean, where are you going to find wheels? Like, is everybody going to start making 30mm wheels? Like,
it's proprietary Senate wheels.
Yeah, it's crazy. How
you get them hook, line, and sinker that way.
Well, clearly. Yeah, if they're great and if they actually ship. Yeah. So the Senate system itself was pretty interesting. I want to say it was very similar to the Razor system.
It was the exact same thing.
Okay, was it?
Yeah.
I wonder what the relationship there was. Like, was it something that they just decided this was the best way to make a frame? Like, did they look at the Razors and say, well, that's a standard, why don't we go with that?
I would probably assume that they looked at what was available and saw this is going to be the easiest way to adapt it.
Yeah, you know, probably.
From one manufacturer to another, because Senate, very much like 50-50, offered yeah. different base plates for different skates.
Right.
So that is something that I very distinctly remember. It was not easy to find anybody that carried 50-50 base plates for Oxygens. That was not easy. And the only person that I knew that had them was Champion, and he skated like 7.5 skate, and that wasn't going to work for me. So
I have a feeling that we made a few and that Champion got all of the few. I don't think there were that many out there, to be completely honest.
Yeah. It's very possible. I've asked Champion a couple times if he still has those skates with the 50-50 frames, and
right.
he is being a rational human being and staying away from social media.
Smart.
So he hasn't even looked at my asking it.
Smart
so
guy. So the 50-50 frames is a good segue. So the 50-50 frames came out around the same time, probably a few months after the Senate frames. The Senate frames didn't sell super well, and I don't know if it was I don't know why. I honestly don't know why. I don't know if it was a quality thing or if it was a marketing thing. I do know that the 50-50 frames sold really well, at least for us. Our expectations of the 50-50 frame was extremely low. We wanted to make enough to cover our costs, and Senate was a big company back then, so they probably needed to sell more than we needed to. The mounting system was very similar. You know, we would both require skaters to drill out their rivets and rivet on a new base plate, and then the frame would mount to that base plate. The difference was that while the Senate system had two bolts in the back and two bolts in the front, with two little like Lego style nubs. So there were four points of mounting in the front and four points of mounting in the back. The 50-50 was a front, was like a Lego, with a, almost a square Lego, probably around 20mm, in width, squared, I guess. And then the frame bolt would go through it. And then in the back, it was a recessed version of that. So you would have male, female, and then the base plates would be male, female. And I think that was really the beginning of the aftermarket frame market. You know, Senate sold some frames for a while, but they kind of dropped out and weren't super interested in the market. But 50-50, we went pretty hard for a long time. I mean, it was probably 4 or 5 years of selling and of variations and of you know, we came out with a large frame. We had OEMs, so they would come on like the USD Throne skates. There were, as Ben mentioned, base plates for all different sorts of skates. You know, to name a few, we had the standard ones that fit on the Majestic 12 style rollerblade skates. We had Oxygen's limited supply of Oxygen's. We definitely had Razor's flats, which were you know, very skinny ones that John Elliott was skating. I mean,
but that was just a little like mount that yep. went inside the recess of it.
Exactly.
You didn't even see it. Yeah.
Nope, you didn't see it at all. It was made out of aluminum, and you would drill into your sole plate with four little screw rivet things, and it probably made it a little taller, obviously, but I mean, we used aluminum, so it was as thin as we could make it. And then the thrones was probably the big one, where there were a throne base plate that mounted onto the throne boot.
But that was the juice heel plate too. Did that come on everything?
So was that just the? Yeah, that was more of the Rossi's style, because we had to cut out the fin. I mean, the original gap for the juice fin was high enough to fit over the Rossi's fin, like the Majestic 12 fin in the heel without having to modify your skate. And that was why there was a bit of a gap, and it wasn't just flat. It probably should have been flat. I mean, if somebody's going to go through the process of drilling out their rivets and mounting a new thing, like they probably don't mind using a mat knife and cutting off the fin. But, you know, hindsight, right? So those sold really well. And we had that frame mounting system for a very long time. While we were selling those frames, there were probably two advancements, maybe more, but probably two advancements and introductions of frames. First was Rossi's came out with a Fifth Element. Now, that was around the same time as the Senate Frames hit. I think it was the same NSGA show that those Fifth Elements came out.
The Fifth Element came out before 50-50?
They came out at the same time.
Okay.
They were probably months apart. Did either of you ever skate Fifth Elements? I know I never did.
I did.
I had a buddy that had a pair, and I would skate his from time to time, but I was still skating Oxygens then.
What did you think, Mark? Why did you stop?
Because I kept ripping the top part of it. I had the second generation ones, the all black ones.
Oh, right.
And they just, for whatever reason, the way my foot worked, I don't know. What I remember of them, and I'm probably going to get hate mail for this, but I just remember them being heavy. Like, that's what I remember of them.
Yeah.
I just remember, like, there being a lot of hardware at the, like, at the base of the skate, like, it being bottom heavy. So.
Well, there were, so the way that those, I found a YouTube video, I think, one of the Back to Playing podcasts I put in the show.
Oh my
notes,
god!
But, not that one.
Oh really? Not,
no, there's
you
another,
found
one.
Another one.
There's another one with a guy replacing his frames on a Rossi's Fifth Element, and
okay,
it was a very similar 3-point system like the Rollerblade Dirk, but they mounted very differently. Have you ever taken yours apart, Mark?
Yeah, I did. Of course I did.
I've taken every single skate I've ever had apart.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, I thought the mounting was super interesting.
Super interesting, right?
Yeah.
So they used what probably were axles, and they would go through like the axle kind of, and they had these, well, you could probably tell it better than I could.
Yeah, there were three triangles that came out the bottom of the boot, kind of look at, like it kind of gave the profile of a tri-skate without any wheels on, like looking at it now.
Mm-hmm.
And the frame and the sole frame was all one piece. And you just slid that over the triangles and put the three extra axles in, and that's how it mounted.
That was
so it was horizontal, not vertical.
Right.
So that was kind of the difference, yeah.
And so thinking about skates, looking at all the different skates, that was, again, one of the few flat sole skates for the time. You know, I guess you could say the Dirk was flat sole, kind of, but...
No.
I mean, it really wasn't.
Say that, no.
Yeah, it really wasn't.
Well, I would until you, I would say that it was until you wore down, you know, the fin, because your foot was in a flat ish position.
Right.
It's just your heel was raised and it was compensated with the,
it wasn't a lightning fin. Where you were like doing like,
yeah,
soles on your, like in the ball of your,
yes,
foot.
Lean back, yeah, soles, right?
Yeah. But it was still two separate pieces. Like you look at the fifth element or the fatty, that's all one piece.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
one continuous
flat
piece.
Precisely. Yeah. And the for full sure. The full replacement of the system, that's the first, looking at, yeah, the list, that's the first time that we had that full, almost like the bottom of an Aeon, right? Like if you consider, mm-hmm, everything,
yeah,
you know, take a step, yeah, back, it really is very similar to the Aeon. Aside from the fact that you mount it, instead of mounting it from the cuff bolt, you, yeah, mounted it, you know, down below, and then you would have cuffs in addition to that. Very interesting. I love that all these skate companies, you know, back in the 90s, they had money, man. They were doing R&D. They were like, what do you want to build? Let's build some crazy aggressive skates. Well, what would you like? And they were like, well, yeah, I don't know. Let's come up with something crazy. And they were probably racing for patents as well at the time. So it was, yeah, like all of these were very different, but they probably all had patented designs so that they could say, we were the first and we have, like if they could differentiate themselves in the market, mm-hmm, that's the only way that you could get this crazy three mount Rossi's replaceable sole frame system, right? You had to buy a Rossi's fifth element. There's no other way.
It was a good looking skate though.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, it was.
They came in at the right time for tricks. So they were amazing at back farve and at royals and backslides. And you see, I mean, that skate was designed for back farve and royals. This perfect groove inside of it. The angle was perfect. Everything was perfect about it.
That
makes perfect sense. Like there's that Dino VFR video that I sent you off.
Yeah.
One of the guys that's in that, like he filmed his entire section, Alf, Steve Iacono, filmed his entire section in fifth elements. He had a pair of red ones and he had a pair of black ones.
That's crazy.
But he fucking destroyed shit in them. He did some really amazing stuff in them.
I feel like I need to get a pair for my wall. I mean, so I have a pair of Solomons. I have a pair of Rollerblade TRS. And I have a pair of K2 250s. I mean, Rossi's and Oxygen. Unfortunately, Ben, though, you know, I have to admit it. Those are the two that I'm missing, you know, that would fill out the OG style, amazing skate.
Well, at least you recognize that Argons were amazing.
So moving on. the only other major news. So we're working our way up to UFS, but the only other major change was the introduction of Solomon. So when Solomon came into the market, I couldn't find a date for Solomon entering the market, but it was probably 99, maybe 98. It was after the aftermarket frames hit. It was after the fifth elements hit. They might have been in rec for a while, but their first ST boot, I don't even know what the first one was called.
Was it the ST8?
Was it the ST8?
No.
The 8. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep.
There's an ST8 and the ST9s.
So the 8 and the 9. So those were the first, again, very similar to the fifth elements where you could replace that. Well, I guess they were more similar to the Oxygens where the boot, the frame was replaceable, but the frame mounted and included the soles. It was a flat sole. It was, bomb-proof skates. There's a reason why, even though Solomon stopped making skates, you know, years ago, that people still hoard them. They were an incredible boot. And Salomon, did you guys ever skate Salomons? I've never skated Salomons.
I did, yeah.
I did not.
What was that ride like? I mean, so a couple interesting things with the Salomon. One of them, and what was probably the big differentiator, and I'm sure that they patented it, was they had a shock absorber. So up until now, all of the skates had that natural heel lift that you would find in figure skates and in hockey skates. And by that I mean that if you were standing on, if you were standing in a pair of skates without frames mounted, right? So it was just your boot. Your heel would be like you were in high heels. So you would have a good, I mean, Mark, you probably know, but probably an inch or so.
I think it's 11 millimeters.
11 millimeters. I'm sure. I knew you were going to go metric on me. So so you have a good 11 millimeter raise in your heel. The K2 Fatty, of course, was a flat frame, flat sole, and a lot of people didn't like that it was also a flat ride. So as you would skate, you would get that K2 lean. And you would lean back, and you would skate, and you were like, whoa, and you'd fall back.
Fall back.
Yeah, because you were used to leaning forward, like towards your toes. Yeah. Salomon was a mix of the two. So what they did is they had the same concept of the K2 Fatty. They had that flat frame. They had that flat boot. But then they added the shock absorber. The shock absorber probably was 11 mil that lifted you up a little bit so that it felt like every other skate on the market with the exception of the K2. So it lifted you up, but then rather than just using plastic, they used it for shock absorption. So it made those skates so much more comfortable to ride. Nobody had done that before them. They were the first.
That's a good call on their part.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I'm sure they patented it. And if I remember correctly, so this brings us to UFS. If I remember correctly.
Wait. Actually.
Yes. Yes.
The USD Cyrus had a pre-UFS boot that had a shock absorber in it.
It did. You're right.
And flat-soled.
Yep.
And flat-soles. I forgot about that. Did it use... What did it use? So I know that the
it was. It was it was a weird hybrid. It came naturally with that Razor's four-point mount, but it also included the 50-50 adapters.
Right, I remember that. Okay, yeah. So I remember, yes, so the adapters that we made were for the Cyrus and for the flats. And maybe they were the same adapters, which made sense if they were the same weird frame mounting thing. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot about the Cyrus. That was a flat sole. That was a internal shock absorber. That was everything that UFS eventually became.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Yeah. I had a pair of Cyrus. I had a test pair of Cyrus. And the Cyrus, I think, came in a bigger size for a sample size for some reason. And nobody else could skate them. So I was skating them. And I really liked them.
I know that they did a weird, like, they did 9-10 shell on that, I think.
Right.
Instead of an 8-9 shell.
That's probably it.
So, yeah.
UFS was. Probably a topic that started in like 99, maybe early 2000, but probably more like 99. And Salomon they were the big company. You know, they were the first of the big companies to come in to rollerblading, to inline skating. That was, K2 was there, I guess. And I don't know if Oxygen was big, but Salomon was fairly big. They were probably like the K2. And when they came in, I think they realized that there were aftermarket frames. They knew the 50-50 frame. They saw the skates on the market. And because they had the luxury of coming in late, they let everybody else kind of experiment. You know, they let Rollerblade go through and do the Dirk. They let Rosie's go through and do the... brain fart. Fifth element, right. They let, you know, oxygen go through into the argon. They saw the razors. They knew that everybody had been trying these different things. So they knew that a replaceable frame was important. And they proposed, hey, we want to support your frames. This was coming to us. We want to support your frames, but we want to do it right. And more power to them, that was the right call. They wanted to have a standard for frame mounting. And I'm sure that a lot of other companies were thinking about it, but Solomon put in the R&D to do it. And they were in a unique position where they had skates. You know, none of us who are making frames could really make skates to support a standard. They had that R&D budget. They had people making skates that they could test, you know, the different designs and see if it worked. So they proposed UFS. And I'm sure it went back and forth. I wasn't in all the meetings. I was in some of the meetings. But I remember Andy and Jess, of course. I remember Ezekwe. I remember Arlo. I remember the guys from Solomon. And really, that was about it. I don't think there were a lot of skate manufacturers involved. I think it was Razors, and I think it was Solomon and USD. I think those were kind of the three that were involved from skate manufacturing. None of the other big brands, the Rosies, the Rollerblades, the K2s, wanted anything to do with it because we were such a small blip on the radar. Aggressive was not a big thing. So Solomon did drawings, and they came up with this frame mounting system, which was called the Universal Frame System. And it featured, you can actually, I found the patent. I put the patent in the notes. They patented this design, which featured a 2-bolt mounting system. The highlights. So I don't know that there's a published standard anywhere. I wish there were, but it featured a 2-bolt mounting system, 167 millimeters apart. And they actually say that it's 165 to 170 with the focus on 167. So it's like they give you a little wiggle room, which is fascinating.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So
and why?
I know.
Why did they land on that number?
Like, well, I'm sure they came up with it because they wanted 165 to 170. And 165 is probably based on the standard frame mounting from the speed skating, yeah. Right? So this all makes sense. Yeah. Why they didn't just stick with 165 makes no sense to me. Like, why not just do that? Like, don't say there's any wiggle room, right? You know, yeah. You make them make a hole, and it's an 8 mil hole, and it's 165 millimeters apart, and that's done. Like, there's the standard. No, the patent actually says 165 to 170, landing on 167. Like, okay, fine. The big difference is that the frames are flat. So the mounting from the 167 in the front and the back are the same level. All of the frames, regardless of size, use that same 167 millimeter split. So you could ride a size 1, which would be like 230 mil from first wheel to fourth wheel, or a size 4, which is probably like a 290 first wheel to 4 mil, and it would use the same 167 millimeter mount. Which is ridiculous. Like, could you imagine having a size 6 boot and riding a size 4? I mean, it's kind of like what the Joey and Leon do right now with a 5-wheel mm-hmm. Wizards, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably very similar. Well, if you look, like, when last weekend when the wife and I went skating with the kid, like, mm-hmm. I put those white, you know, size large Volo frames on her size 5.5, you know, Rollerblade Downtown 4s.
Sure.
So there was definitely overhang over her toes and heels on the sole frames.
And that was one of the things that UFS was trying to do. Like, there was going to be a standard. You know, they made a really compelling argument, you know, and 50-50, we were profitable. We were fine. And we agreed. We were like, this is the right thing to do for rollerblading. Like, we need a standard so that people can have an option of frames that they can pick. So when they walk into the skate shop, they can buy a boot, they could buy frames, and they could buy wheels. And they could customize their skates, and frame companies could flourish and come up with whatever crazy design they want. and everybody could have a unique frame. So the standard 167 millimeters apart, it was a 20 millimeter radius, 20 millimeter diameter, and a 3 millimeter tall nub. So it was a circle that was recessed. The boots stuck out, and the boots were the male, and the frames were the female side. So they would mount in like that, and then there was a frame bolt, which was a quarter inch. Was it 4 mil? What was it, Mark?
I think they're six.
6 mil?
6 or 8 millimeter, yeah. They're not English.
No, they're not. I keep saying quarter inch, but it's wrong.
It's whatever the equivalent of quarter 20 is.
Yes,
precisely. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I know that 50-50 used quarter 20s.
Yes.
Because I can remember that.
Because that's what we did, because we didn't know any better. So we would do that. So that was UFS. And UFS was a document that a lot of people... I want to say everybody passed around and was like, this is what we're standardizing on. And we got to work. And
sir, before you continue, I have two questions.
Please, I'd love to expand if I can.
Did they have any alternate designs? Like, did they have any concept two for this that they brought to this group of people?
So the initial...
Like, just as a historical point of interest.
Yes,
like,
no. So the initial UFS actually was not symmetrical. So the two nubs, the 20-millimeter nubs that UFS mount to, one of the nubs actually had a cut out of it. So it was a... Like, imagine a circle that you just kind of came in a little bit and you cut a slice. So if you took a pie, and instead of cutting it like a pie, like normal people would do, you just cut off like an inch of it on one side. And it was just this flat line.
Okay.
That was the original design. And it was really quickly shot down. Because we wanted to be able to flip frames so that you could, you know, wear them whichever way you want. That doesn't mean that you had to design the frames to be symmetrical. I mean, we didn't. Many frames don't. But it was a requirement that it was an option so that people could have frames that were symmetrical so you could flop them around.
So wait. Let me understand this.
Yeah.
So the original idea for UFS frame, or for UFS as a standard, dictated the shape of the frame?
No, but
the nub dictated... Like, one of the nubs looked like a D.
Yes, right? That's a good way to look at it. Okay. Yes, it looked like a D.
Okay. Yes. All right. I'm following now.
I think it's a hard thing for me to describe. I'll put something in the show notes when we release this that explains it.
So
if I can't find
the
drawings,
I'll explain it to everybody where it'll make perfect sense.
Please.
The UFS T-nut, that shape with the flat on it that you put inside of the boot.
Yes.
That's what, like a D like that.
Exactly. There you go. So it's not a circle. It's kind of a circle, but it looks like a D.
Yeah. Yep.
That was the original design, and it was only one of them. The other one didn't have it. I think the other one was circular. It was just one of them was like that. So it required you to ride frames in a specific direction. And that was not cool. But everything else was fine. I mean, to be completely honest, I don't think any one of us in those meetings were really like mechanical engineers or anything. We were a bunch of skaters. Yeah. And I think we just wanted to build cool stuff. And Solomon came to town with their host of testing and like molds and designers, and they were like, hey guys, this is what we're going to do. And we were like, yes, that makes sense. Like, we're cool.
So
we're cool with it.
You said that Solomon held the patent on that?
They did, and I don't know that they do, but that is the patent, yes.
How did everybody else use it then?
I want to say I'm not a patent lawyer, but I want to say that there was, in addition to that, they had the patent for the internal shock absorber. And by supporting UFS, you were, and it was in their best interest, right? If they were making a frame standard, it's in their best interest to have a lot of people who use frames. Again, what we're talking about a market differentiator. They were the first UFS boot. So they had the lock on the market. If you wanted a UFS boot for the first year, you would have to get that Aaron Feinberg UFS Solomon. And they gave everybody free use of the patent in order to push UFS as a standard. In addition, if a skate company wanted to use UFS, which is where we mentioned before with that internal shock absorber being that patent, I'm sorry, that Solomon invention. If anybody wanted to use, because, you know, if you have a flat frame, one of the easy ways to do it is you have a flat boot. So how do you keep from having the K2 lean? Well, you put a shock absorber in there or some sort of a heel raise, but it makes sense to have it, you know, squishy. They had the patent on that, and they said anybody that was supporting UFS could also use this patent for the shock absorber. And I think that was where everybody kind of jumped in. And I'm sure that Matias has more information on that. I want to say that they were using the shock absorber for the Cyrus around the same time. So maybe there was like this weird patent thing that they were doing in some agreement or whatever. But I do know that shortly thereafter, the Cyrus were UFS.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was UFS. And, you know, the Solomons came out first. They were the first boots. I don't remember the date, but I want to say it was in 2001. I know that the 50-50 UFS frames came out around that time as well. I know the ground control frames came out around that time as well. So those were like the three original UFS products.
And Kaiser too.
Kaiser was probably around the same time right as well.
There too.
It was an interesting time, and I know that we pitched to the other shops. The other skate companies that UFS was a thing we want to do, like get on board, and they were like very gun shy, because they had their thing, you know. Rosie's had their Fifth Element mounting thing, maybe a couple years earlier, and you want to get as much value out of these molds as you can. Why would they come up with something new? You know, what's the incentive for them? They don't sell frames. You know, why would they? But slowly and surely, every skate company came around, and now it's very difficult to buy an aggressive skate that doesn't have UFS.
There's
no, it's not.
So that's where we. So that's a little history lesson. So that's where we get. There are a few things to mention. The oddballs that are worth talking about since UFS came out. The first being, there was the core system, which never really went anywhere, but it was a 50-50 and ABLE partnership. The core system was a UFS skeleton. So the internals were made out of aluminum, and it would conform to the UFS standard. But then the frames would slide onto that mount using the first and the fourth wheels. So the axles were the point of mounting. It was a really interesting concept. Unfortunately, both companies kind of went under and didn't invest in any technology since then. I think it maybe lasted a couple years. I don't know that ABLE ever came out with a core system frame. I think that they went under before any of that could have happened, but it was an interesting concept. Another mounting standard is the Bont speed skating standard that I don't know anything about, but I know it's there.
Yeah, I can kind of chime in
on that.
Yeah, go for it. somebody educate.
I know very little about it too, but it's either a 165 or a 195 with a third point between the two,
okay,
creating a stiffer mounting so you have more energy transfer.
Okay.
So, but there, it's three points in a line.
So it is it's a standard 165 or 195, whatever. But through the H block, there would be another bolt that goes into the boot.
Yep.
Yeah, so Bont sells on their website, they have a their little nomenclature for it is 3PF.
Okay.
So they have a 125, or not 125, excuse me, they have a 165 mount, and they have a, they also have a frame that'll fit both 2-point and 3-point, but only fit 195 mount on 2-point frames, or 2-point boots, so that's interesting. But they do have options that are available, like this, the 165 mount they have is a 4x80, 84, or 90. So I don't know if they really have it for anything that's, you know, quote unquote modern, you know, boots or modern setups.
And they are raised heel, right? So they've got that 11 mil raise or whatever the measure is.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Does anybody, is it good? Do people use it?
I don't know. That's probably out of my realm.
Yeah.
I mean,
what I've seen, it's kind of their proprietary idea,
right?
And they're kind of sticking to their guns on it. And from what I've gleaned is that it's kind of dying off because it's proprietary and nobody else does it.
I wonder if you could tell the difference if you had the same boot, but using that system versus the standard 165 system, if that third bolt makes that much of a difference.
I bet it would.
I'm skeptical, to be perfectly honest.
It's interesting.
But I mean, I'm not a speed skater. I'm
precisely,
you know, so I can't say that it definitely would. It definitely wouldn't. I mean, clearly, we've already said that, you know, the three point mount on the Dirks was a very solid option as well as on the Fifth Element.
Right.
So it very well could have been a really awesome idea. But I mean, I have a very special hole in my heart that a different frame mounting technology uses for that.
Yeah.
I guess for like just thinking about it for a second, there's trade-offs. There's the weight trade-off of the extra hardware.
Of course.
And two, I mean, if you think of the arch as a strong structure. Mm-hmm. So if you have an arch between the first and the what we normally would think is the second, the front and the back, you have an arch there. If you have two smaller arches, is that stronger or weaker?
Right.
I would say that it's weaker.
Right.
So, I think it all depends on how your stride is. And, you know, I mean, they obviously find some function in it.
Yeah, they wouldn't stick with it if it wasn't
beneficial.
Yeah.
But I think we're, you know, not the group of people to
talk on that. No. Agreed. And I mean, we've mentioned the 195, so that's the same as a 165 mount, which was the standard with speed skating, but it's a bit wider, a bit longer. And the reason that was
when the 110s came out.
Okay.
So, and if I remember right, that was actually pushed by PowerSlide. They said, hey, we want to go from 4x100s to 4x110s.
Yeah,
that doesn't physically fit with this mount, so we're going to make a different mount.
And I mean, that again kind of is the problem that we're running into with UFS, right?
Yep.
So the 110 millimeter wheel, if you had four in a row and you were trying to ride four 110s, you would rub on that 165 mount. There's no good way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the height versus length trade-off.
Exactly. To keep it low and to keep it symmetrical, right? And in a good line, you're going to need a wider mount. And so they introduced the 195, which sticks it between the 1 and 2 and between the 3 and 4. And you can ride that flat 4x110s. Which, 4x110s, I mean, that's crazy talk to me.
It's gnarly.
I mean... I mean, again, not my market. I went and skated my tri-skates today, which are 3x110s, and I still feel like I'm floating. I mean, those things are crazy. 4x110s, that's huge. But it also probably opens up to, you know, 125s and to be able to do much more. Like, if you had that wider mount, you could probably do much more interesting things. Mm-hmm. Other notables to mention, the PowerSlide Trinity mount. So I've never skated Trinities, but I know both of you have. Again, another technology that PowerSlide, just like the 195s, presumably is a PowerSlide thing. The Trinity mount is a PowerSlide thing. Can you guys tell me a little bit about it? Because I don't know, since I've never skated them. I know them, but I don't know why I would want them.
Want me to do it, Ben?
Yeah, feel free. Because I've a very smash over the head type argument.
So the Trinity mount is a 3-point system that splits the two front bolts on the side of the frame. The reason for doing this is it creates a triangle, which is the strongest structure. When your stride, the energy goes to better places. It's not wasted so much. It's a more efficient mounting for a stride. It's stronger, and mainly you can get a lower ride height by doing this, because I believe, and this is my speculation or what I've read on the advertisement for it, but mm-hmm. When PowerSlide was developing the Tri-Skate, the mounts get in the way of when you have bigger wheels. So sure. If you move it to the sides, then it's just not in the way. And then that back one, it doesn't really matter because there's that 11 millimeter rise, and you can put the bolt basically anywhere in that back wheel.
Right.
So it's, I've skated Trinity skates for, I've had the Kaze since they came out, and they're fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go back. Like, I just today I skated the skate park, my Aeons, and then I went out. I had my Kaze with, and I skated around, and they're just amazing. Like,
I can't
talk about it enough.
Like, what is the, so for a guy who's never skated Trinity mount, what is the difference between a Trinity mount frame and an Aeon? So an Aeon, for those who don't know, an Aeon is a fairly new, again, PowerSlide pushing the technology, a fairly new skate, you know, maybe a few years old. It is not UFS, but it's an aggressive skate. So it is a single piece boot design. Then there's a cuff as well, but that whole bottom is designed for aggressive. So the frame has a big split. It's got a sole area, flat sole. It's got a pre-grooved area with an H block. It's got a pre-grooved area for backslides. It can fit flat 72 millimeter wheels and still provide enough groove area for groove tricks. It is the most solid skate, because it is a solid skate. What is the comparison between the USD Aeon for you, and for Ben for that matter, between the USD Aeon and the Trinity mount? Compared to UFS, I should say. Compared to UFS.
That's kind of like, that's kind of apples and oranges.
Okay.
For sure.
Like, I would compare the Trinity to like the 165, because it's more comparable.
Okay.
And for me, my notice is when I push off my toes. When you push off your toes hard on a 165 frame, mm-hmm. it's kind of gummy. Like, it's barely noticeable until you skate a Trinity skate, and then you notice that it's not there.
Okay.
And that you're like, all of your energy is going into your wheels. Like, it's so, I like, Ben, can you back me up on this at all? Like, how do I describe this? Like, I can know the feeling, but I can't describe it very well.
Yeah. So it would definitely something that I would say, as far as your power transfer is concerned, would be something closer to what you experience with a hockey skate. So to try to put it into that. But like, I took my Kazis last weekend to an indoor rink, and just, and I had the 80 millimeter frames. I didn't have the 100s yet. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I literally felt the only slop that I felt in that, you know, as far as power transfer is for how loose I had to have the laces so my feet wouldn't fall asleep. I still haven't done my homework on and gotten those completely dialed in just yet. But I mean, it's just every ounce of energy you push into the sole of your foot goes to your wheels and goes to your skating surface. It's just everything that Matthias and I don't remember the other two guys' names off the top of my head, but like in that intro video that they did talking about, you know, the Grand Prix and the the off-road skates and everything like that, everything they said about how amazing that setup is and allowing you to get your power transfer through and keeping you close to your wheels is 100% right. It's not, just like Matthias said, it's not just marketing bullshit. It's what it is. It's the future.
Right. Got it.
I mean, it's a better way to have it out there. It's a better way to mount your frames.
So especially how wide apart are these mounts? So it's creating a triangle. What's this triangle like? Like how wide? It's obviously not. It's different. Like
it's. I'd say like. Maybe like one of the like the wings. Maybe the wing is like, maybe 3/4 of the inside channel of a frame.
Okay.
Maybe. So I mean, it's right. Like for me, it's right under the ball of my toe, and the whatever the like comparable part of your pinky.
Okay.
Toe. You know, it's right. Like when you walk on your foot, it's right where that is. Like that's what I notice. I have crazy high arches.
Okay.
So my foot, it's 3 points that touch the floor. So like I definitely noticed the energy transfer like right away on that. So
Got it.
For me, it's like Ben said, it's the future. It feels like when UFS came out.
Right.
Like it's just such a like obvious, like that makes so much sense. It's kind of dumb to go back to a raised heel aggressive skate with 12 bolts and different parts and pieces. Like it's just, it doesn't make any sense.
So the compelling value proposition for UFS though was variety, was not necessarily what the skate could provide. It was what the frames could provide. In this case, you already have the option with 165 to buy whatever frame you want. Right, you could get an 80 mil, you can get a 125, you can go whatever you want. What's interesting about Trinity, from my perspective, you know, as a guy who's never skated them, is that it's an improvement on the mounting system. So it's not just being able to buy variety in aftermarket frames. It's to buy a better feeling aftermarket frame, something that you couldn't improve with a 165. You can't make a 165 any better. They tried, right? Bont tried by taking that 165 and saying, you know what, we're going to throw another bolt in here and call it special, and this is going to make things better. And clearly that was not enough of a differentiator for people to jump on it.
Yeah,
I would say if there's someone that I think did a good job with a 165 frame to bring it lower and everything like that, would be Flying Eagle, with their supersonic frame. They had a decent split between wheel 1 and 2. It was a 3x110, and you were completely unimpeded by that front the front mount bolt. But they also had to keep in mind that frame might not go onto a Flying Eagle boot, so they had to make sure they didn't make it too short, because they didn't know what the variables were going to be with the other boots out there. So
makes sense.
But I'm also saying that having never skated a 3x110 power slide pleasure tool frame, which had a very similar design.
Yeah. Which is what I skate now. And yeah, they're great. But again, I don't have much point of reference aside from UFS.
So just wait till you get that Trinity. You're going to be amazed.
It'll happen. So that kind of brings us to where we are today, where I think we've seen, so for anybody still listening, so we've talked a lot about how Trinity is amazing, and I got a set of Aeons, and I've been skating Aeons for about a month and a half, and I have to agree, like, there is something going on where the Trinity mount is not just an upgrade in the variety of frame design, it's an upgrade in how the skates feel. The Aeon is a single piece design, and it is a noticeable difference having that single setup. So we started talking. So this is where we were. You know, we started talking about, well, what would be the next UFS? Like, where do we go from here? You know, UFS was a standard that was released in 2001. You know, that's over 15 years that nobody's made any changes to UFS. Could we improve it? You know, there are some problems with UFS. There are some things that people are doing workarounds in order to fit today's style of aggressive skating. Add to that, there are boots out there that are not aggressive. You know, I'm thinking of the like the K2 Uptown and the Rollerblade
Fusion.
Yes, yep. Or the Metro Blades.
Metro that, Blades are 165.
Oh, they are.
Yep.
Fusions then that are designed for fitness, freestyle sort of skates, but they're not aggressive skates, but they're UFS. So is there something that we could be doing for a UFS 2? Like, is that possible? Is there enough wrong or that could be improved with UFS that a second version could be something that we could propose?
I'll say that there definitely are ways that they can be improved, but I probably don't know what they are. I mean, I'm not a carpet walker, so.
So what are?
So,
yes.
So here's my question.
So tell me what you don't like about UFS, first of all. So we had a podcast last week, and you didn't like UFS, and I know that Mark as a designer probably has some ideas on how he would improve UFS and has been thinking about it for a long time. I obviously have as well. I want to know what you don't like about UFS, Ben. And let's start from there. Let's start from the problems that you've experienced with UFS and the workarounds that you've seen people have to come up with in order to make skating, their style of skating, better.
All right. So what I see as a shortcoming with UFS is it's, especially when it comes to something with a carbon style sole plate, like the sevens, and I'll get to that, sevens, carbons, carbon freeze, sebas, etc., there's not a lot of room or there's not a lot of how do I say it? There's not a lot of surface tension between, you know, your frame, your sole, and your boot to allow for a stronger power transfer, like we were saying with the Trinity mount.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I found with the sevens when I did my bearing video was I had a whole lot of flex right under my foot. Now the ones that I got, they had the updated version of them, and they had screws and anti-rivets, you know, I think two in the front or maybe four in the front and two in the back or something around that. And if that was the improvement, I'd hate to feel what it felt like without those.
Yeah.
It felt very, very squishy would be a good word to use. Now, at the same time, this very well could have just been because I didn't put enough, you know, time into it. It was a brand new boot. I'd never skated the sevens, never skated the, you know, MyFit crown liners, which are very, very good. I'll say again. But I just, I didn't, there was a lot going against me, and having skated Aeon since Christmas 2016 or mm-hmm. something like that. I mean, it was, I had set myself up for, I don't want to say failure, but I had set myself up for, not necessarily having the best time
yeah.
on a UFS boot, but, that's really the only thing that I saw. So I also thought before we got onto this recording, mm-hmm. I thought I probably would have had a better time with something like a Classic Throne or maybe something like a Voloscape, which I know that I wouldn't because it's just too narrow.
Sure.
But something that had those additional mounts in the sole plates, you know, to firm that up a little bit. So that might have been part of that too. But I follow blueprints and I put shit together. I don't necessarily make the blueprints. So, sure.
So your concern, like at least in that experience, was that the mounting wasn't right. That typically the base plate mounts to the sole, mounts to the boot, and then the frame mounts to the base plate, and by introducing the base plate and having it sandwiched in between, it might have been the reason for it. So the frame mounting directly to the boot, but having a sole plate sandwiched in between the frame and the boot might have been the reason for the squishiness.
That's what I'm thinking that it was. But I mean, again, I probably was started behind the eight ball sure. with going with skates that I wasn't necessarily used to. And I also think like, well, what's another skate that could have been, you know, a better way to go with that? And I think of, you know, well, what about a REMS? It's like, well, clearly that's not going to be the issue, because if it's not a true balance REMS, then I'm already going to be, you know, even further behind the eight ball, so to speak,
right.
by not having something that's going to be nice and up and down. You know, shadows might have been a good way to go, but at the same time, like, I don't want to try to track down a pair of, you know, 1.0 shadows.
Yeah.
And then do all that silliness. So, I really enjoyed the way that the sevens felt, as far as like feeling them on my feet. They were very comfortable and they fit my foot well. But I mean, until they adapt that boot into a Aeon type skate,
sure.
I don't think I'll be skating again anytime soon.
Sure. Yep. Totally get that. So. I can let Mark, do you have any other concerns with UFS? Like, I don't want to take the ball and throw it to Mark, cause I know he's going to run with it, which isn't a bad thing, but
I don't really have, like, there's other ideas that I would have. Like when Trinity first, you know, started getting thrown out there, I was thinking like, how can PowerSlide license that to another aggressive company? Is it even possible?
Yeah.
And the only company that I thought that would even be able to do it would be Roadblade, because of that, the way that they mount the soles on the solo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't see any other way that it's going to happen other than maybe something, maybe like a Volo and like cut a recess in the sole frame or something.
Sure.
I don't really know, but, you know, it could work. It might not work at all.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how else you could adjust UFS and really make it work.
And I would add that Trinity by design is not really an aggressive setup, because it doesn't have the two bolts in a line protected by a frame. There would need to be some serious changes to the way sole plates are designed
mm-hmm.
in order to compensate for the two in the front of the frame, the two bolts to stick out. Otherwise, you would grind on the Trinity mount. Add to that,
for sure.
You know, the problem that we talked about a bit ago was they're not symmetrical. And that is a cool thing. I mean, neither are 165s, but that is a cool thing that I think is an expectation for UFS, that you would be able to design a frame that could fit either way. It could be symmetrical if you wanted. So I don't know that Trinity would be the right answer, but I think that the concept of the Trinity definitely has legs, different mounts. And again, opening your eyes to, oh, hey, we're not stuck with just the 165. There's Trinity. We're not stuck with just UFS. You know, if we had enough people get on it, there is potential to have a UFS 2 that would make a better setup that accommodates the way the skating is now.
For sure. I think it's just like, even if we come out with something that's a great idea that's going to work really well, it's the question of what companies are going to be available to tool up for it. I mean, like, I'm sure Rosie's would be able to do it and then find a way to get, you know, Volos on 2.0. Like, Adapt wouldn't have any issues with doing it because they're hand laying their carbon fiber and shit. But, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, actually, I think it could be actually adjusted pretty quickly.
I mean, we're looking at Razor's Shift is a base plate.
So is the SL.
Mold. Yep. So.
Even the Colt is. I mean, they discontinued the Genesis, so who cares about that boot unless you're Dave Ware.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's potential, and I think that if there was a compelling argument and a market behind it, you know, the conversation could happen.
Agreed.
So I'll let Mark run with it, but my first... I have, like, three things that bug me about UFS.
Okay.
And... Mark, feel free to jump in. First being, I love my wish frames. The wish frames are kind of like a flat anti-rocker setup. So they're perfect for skating. They feel like skating anti-rocker, but I'm actually skating flat with a slight rocker. The way that they get around this is... it has a 72 millimeter on the 1 and 4 wheel and a 60 millimeter on the 2 and 3 wheel. Now, why would they do that, right? Well, first, they wanted to make sure that there was enough space in the middle. So that split between the 2 and 3, where your groove is, needs to be enough so that you can skate, you know, ledges and such. They actually bring the groove down a little bit. So it's almost like an anti-rocker wheel. That's built into the groove. So when I do groove tricks, I'm actually skating on the frame. I'm not really touching the wheel at all. The catch is that, you know, why couldn't they just do 72 mil wheels? Well, because it wouldn't be long enough. Well, why couldn't they just do 60 mil wheels, right? Flat 60, that makes sense. The problem is if you do flat 60, you're going to run into problems with UFS. So the UFS bolt is 167 millimeters in distance. And it's centered in the middle of the boot, middle of the frame. So if you had 60 millimeter wheels and you put them flush as low as you could go and you put them out as far as the wish frame is, which in my opinion is the optimal design for grinds. I mean, even to put it in you guys' perspective, the Aeon frame, if you put the 60 millimeter wheels as far out in the middle as the Aeon, you would be really close, if not already rubbing, on that UFS bolt. It's just right there. It's the worst possible spot. That is a problem. And that is something, as skating evolves and we see more big wheels and we see bigger grooves and we see these wish frame style frames, the UFS system is getting in the way. And people are working around that. Either they're making frames taller, or they're substituting with smaller wheels in the middle. Mark,
I totally agree with that. That kind of dovetails into my rant.
Yeah,
I guess.
Go.
Okay.
that's my big one, and that's the one that hits me the most because I love my wish frames, and I love the low ride that I get on the Aeons. I want that standard, but I don't want to have to buy 72 and 60 mil wheels. Like, I don't feel like I'm getting anything out of the 72s. I want flat 60, like, or I want flat 72, or I want flat 80, but I want to be able to have these flat setups with a wide split. And that is really difficult to do with UFS.
Yep. I think UFS is wonderful for traditional aggressive skating. If you're a size 9 boot and you're skating anti-rocker, like, it's perfect for that. It's flat. You have the heel lift with the shock absorber if you're going to jump gaps. Like, mm-hmm. you really can't improve on that. What I think the future is more of a hybrid of urban skating and big wheels blading and wizard skating and all that stuff more incorporated into things. You could do a UFS 2.0 and just stretch it out, but that doesn't help people with a smaller foot. And also, when you stretch out the mounting points, like a 195 mount, is you have more energy loss than a 165 mount. Like, that's just kind of known in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But it, like, that's a trade-off they're willing to make. The problem with doing it with aggressive skates is that's a huge flex point. Like, you're asking to snap frames doing that.
For sure.
If you're skating anti-rocker, you know, like, and I know, like, it seems like that's, like, that happened a lot more, you know, way back in the day. Like, I don't really know if it's just people are just not skating, you know, people just aren't jumping off of roofs because we're all 35 now and right. Don't do that anymore.
Right, right.
Like, this all came to me last night. I watched your video law when you did the tri-skate frame with the razor skates.
Uh-huh.
And your review on them. And you said, like, it was just kind of the look on your face. It was like, you liked skating them, but it was just like, you just didn't like them for, like, doing any amount of distance in those aggressive skates. And, I think we can make carbons and sebacarbons, and, like, we can do all this stuff, and, like, we're still skating in Ballows, you know, like, nothing against the company. Like, I think they're great and they're beautiful skates. Like, but I think we can advance the technology. And I actually, like, I'm shocked at this, but I think the future is in a quick change system.
Okay.
Like, not what Razors is doing now, but, like, something similar, but something where you don't have to take the skate off. If we had a skate, if we had aggressive skates that are more like free skates, not in every respect, and this is my blue sky thinking, you know, I haven't thought every degree out of this, but, like, if you had a skate that was good for urban skating and aggressive skating, and you had a system where you could just clip it in and, like, swap out frames, I think that would be ideal, because that would fix the mounting problem with UFS, because that wouldn't be there.
True.
And you wouldn't have to work around the bolts. Like, when I did the level 2 frame, like, it was such a freaking nightmare. Like, because, and, like what Ground Control did, their fix was to cheat the system of UFS, and people were snapping their frames because they tried to push the wheels out too much.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, it was so hard to find that balance of length and height. And when you don't have to work around the bolts, you know, my idea for it was we have freaking all sorts of technology with clips in it, like seatbelts.
Sure.
Right? Like, we trust our lives to seatbelts, and they clip in and out. You know, like, why can't we do that with a pair of skates? Like, I think our technology we have now is so far past what we had 20 years ago for how we can design things. And, like, what I've always loved about UFS is anybody could machine out a pair of UFS frames.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it doesn't take much to get that mount in there. And I think, like, if there was enough people involved, we could do something like that, and like, work as a group, as a, you know, cohesive group. I mean, there's no money in it, but who knows? I don't know. That's my idea.
I think it's fair. I think there are, so my hockey skates have a quick release system where there's a little trigger that I depress this switch of sorts, and I can pull off the steel. It is a simple lever that just pops in, and then, you know, it clips in, and it's solid. I mean, it's the same as it ever was. Especially if you had room in the heel that you were already assuming that you have a shock absorber, right? You might have room for more gear and equipment for some sort of a slide in, locks in the front, like in the toe sort of thing, and then pops in the back, and then there's some sort of a something that switches in the back.
See, that was kind of my justification for it. If it was like a channel, like an extruded channel, and some kind of clip in the heel portion of it, it could be a straight channel, and you clip it in in and out in the back. And I actually think somebody a couple years ago did something similar to this that was kind of based around UFS. There was a frame and a channel piece that mounted onto a UFS boot. You know, but like, because, you know, watching that video, you took your skates off and you, you know, did the clips and then put the new clips in and blah, blah, blah. And like, that's like taking skates on and off again is a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like,
they are.
You know, and especially, like, I think.
Especially when your socks get all sweaty.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. So I don't know. That's just my idea. And, you know.
I think it's good. Yeah. I think it's good. I came to the quick solution, playing with numbers, trying to see if there was a way to make UFS wider, the mounts wider. And I actually came up with a three-bolt system using a 190. Instead of 195, a 190 mount.
Okay.
So thinking numbers-wise, I drew out some concepts using 60-millimeter rails and 80-millimeter rails. Using a 250 and a 270 mil frames as my big frame and my small frame. And the 190 works pretty well, especially if you have a middle mount. So that you had this three-piece system. The flex problem that you addressed, that is a real problem, would probably be less of a problem. If you had that H block, you know, thing in the middle, you would not have the wear issue, just based on the sizing of the things. I also think that it's worth, you know, what do you, so one observation that I had when I got my tri-skates was that the 165 mount is flat. There's no nubs. Whereas the UFS has that 3 mil by 20 mil diameter nub. What are your thoughts on that nub? Does that nub help?
I like the reason there isn't a nub on the 165 is so you can shift your frame, like, so you can get it, like, you're supposed to, like, your wheels are, your front wheel is supposed to be between your big toe and your second, your pointer toe, I guess it would be. So you can adjust that for your stride and how it is, so you're not pronating or whatever the opposite of pronating is.
Supinating.
Yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So you can get a good stride. And I really like that ability. Like, I've had urban skates that are UFS where I couldn't do that, and it wasn't quite as enjoyable.
Understood.
So, like, and I like the intent of the nubs. I like, you know, that locking mechanism. And I like, again, you know, for aggressive, when it's just, you know, for aggressive, like, that it works because you're not really fine tuning it.
Right.
So
do you think the nubs add anything? I mean, it's a pleasing feeling when you pop them on, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. I've stayed awake at night thinking about this.
Okay.
Not really, but I've thought more about it than I should admit.
Sure.
But there's a lateral, a front to back lock about that. That's nice. Like, I feel like it locks it in place. It's like a locking pin.
Sure.
Basically what it is, you know,
sure, like, it's, sure.
But
I don't know if it's necessary.
Yeah.
That's the point that I'm going to try to make. So K2 on the Il Capos, which was based off of the Fatty boot, it was an 80 millimeter urban skate, did not have UFS nubs or cups in the frames. So
it's
probably not necessary. Yeah.
Well, and I will add that the Wizard frames, although the Wizard frames are UFS, many people, and they sell that Shop Task Special Seba mounted directly to that Seba SX boot without the UFS nubs at all.
So the Wizard frames don't have the nubs? I know the boot doesn't.
The frames have the recess area for the nubs.
Okay.
But clearly if there's no nub to lock it in, it's just space now.
See, and that's something I really disagree with. I don't think there should, because that's just a void there. That's just asking for that carbon to break.
And this is a problem with UFS. Again, if they want to make a skate that a frame that is supporting all of the things, what do you do if you want to ride it without the UFS nubs?
Yeah.
You can't make a separate skate frame for it, right?
I mean, I imagine that's easily solved with a couple of washers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that might be what they...
Maybe even some super glue, but...
That might be what they do. I don't know. But I do know that they ride them without sole plates, and the sole plates are what have the nubs. The sole plates mount flat to the Seba. Mm-hmm. So my proposal would be a flat UFS. So UFS2 would be completely flat. I don't think we need the nubs. I think there is potential for, rather than a nub, maybe like a 3 mil line front and back. So the problem with the nub is that it requires the bolt to go through it. But if there were a... So rather than front and back, so what if the... So my assumption is that if this UFS2 were following the same style of UFS, right? And I think that your proposal of a quick change system is the right proposal. But I think that requires a lot more investment from skate manufacturers to do the change. Don't think it's a bad idea at all. I think that if there were a way for a skate company, frame company, whatever, to shoehorn their way into a new standard, I think that a 90 millimeter split, including a middle bolt, would cut out the problems with flex and cut out the problems with the wheel split and having big wheels rub. Make the frame completely flat.
How do you bolt the third bolt in?
Yeah, so I had... So back in the days, there was a problem with removable H-blocks. K2 had a patent on it. Mm-hmm. The patent has expired. So my theory is that you could either drill a hole within your mold, right? So there would be a hole in the H-block, and the bolt would go straight through the H-block and into the boot in the middle. Or you could put it in and then somehow mount an H-block into it. Like, an H-block doesn't have to go all the way up into the frame. There could be, you know, if you were using an aluminum frame or if you had a plastic frame, there could be a two-section sort of two-layer thing. So there would be the H-block that mounts into the whatever, and then the bolt that mounts the frame to the thing.
Yeah.
And again, it could be optional. You know, if you were riding an iRocker, you would probably want to have some sort of a middle thing. Yeah. Like you said, I think it's valid that there would be a problem. But if you were skating, you know, flat 80s on some Kaiser Aero style frames... wizards. I mean, that could be really powerful for wizards. I do like your idea of the lateral or the forward back movement. I wonder if, you know, if we're worried about the rubbing of wheels, I wonder if there's a way to have a little notch put in on the front and the back. So like if there were mounting points 190 or whatever, and then there was some sort of a little like coming out of the boot, like a little nub, and then coming into the boot, a little nub, that would keep it from moving. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would have to sketch it out. Like, it's kind of getting into the weeds now.
It is. Like, it is.
Yeah.
But I think there's something there.
Did you said you ran the numbers on the 190. What
I did
is the, like, for the, like, the bigger frames, like, that seems that makes sense. But right. like for me personally, I hate long frames.
Right.
Like I don't want anything past like 255, like right. first to fourth.
Right.
So like, what is that? Like, what's the split on that? And sure. what's the first to fourth on that?
Sure. So when you're dealing with a 250, which is the classic 50-50 balance frame in the medium size, which is probably the same size as the old 50-50 frame, probably the same size as the Rossi's Fifth Element. It's kind of like the standard yeah. 250 millimeters yeah. is the thing. Yeah. With 60 millimeter wheels and a 90 millimeter UFS 2 mount, you're dealing with 130 millimeter split from 2 to 3.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it gets even crazier with 80 millimeter wheels. And this is flush, right? So this is flush with the boot. Like,
yeah.
I'm probably a mil off because you need a little bit of tolerance for wiggle yeah. room for wheel frames yeah. and everything. For an 80 millimeter wheel, 250 mil front 1 and 4, using a 190 UFS 2 mount, you've got a 90 millimeter split on an 80 mil wheel, which means that you've got probably 10 mil on the inside between wheels 2 and 3.
Yeah.
But that's flat. Well, 80 millimeters on a 250. Yeah. That's yeah. crazy talk.
So something I can tell you off the top of my head, the yeah, level yeah. through 2 is 96 split, and that's a 76 millimeter wheel.
And that's right there, right?
Yeah. Yep. And that's, and that's pushing it yeah. right up. Like that's like rubbing the UFS bolt yeah. as is. So that's awesome.
And the numbers add up as well from, like you were saying, the 190s, I'm sorry, the 270s, mm-hmm. you will start rubbing on the 60. The 80s are no big deal. The 80s are perfect, and it's a max of 110 mil split on 80 mil wheels. I know, isn't that crazy? So the 60 mil, you will have rubbing if you go full width. So if you didn't have to worry about this 190 mount, you could get, and you were riding, say you were riding anti-rocker, okay, on a 190 mount UFS 2, you could go 150 millimeters between 2 and 3.
Jesus Christ.
Is that like a freestyle frame?
Yeah, I mean, basically like a freestyle frame. Well, that's the thing. You could do a wish frame. So yeah. with 60s, I'm running into bolts. There's a bolt problem. Assuming that the frame is going to be around 3 to 4 mil thick, so that you'd want a little area. You know, I don't know how thick they are, but four mil is probably the right amount for you on the high side. And a frame bolt itself is probably 4 mil on the height side, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. about 10 mil wide. So factoring in all that, you've got almost like a 10x10 box that you need to build into your model. If I move those 60s in a little bit and say they're at like 140 millimeter, that's fine. So if I had flat 60s on a 270 millimeter 1 to 4, 140 millimeter, I mean, you could build your own anti-rocker groove just like a wish frame.
Yeah.
And it would be flat 60s instead of flat 72s, but with 60s that are really low.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So that's my concept. I think it has. Wait, again, I want to think it out. The key is that I feel like with my shifts, the mounting plates are $40. So I can get a new sole plate for like $20, $30 or whatever. I could sand those down. I could drill new holes that are 190 mil apart.
Yeah.
And I can test with some 190 mil UFS 2 frames and see if it breaks my ankles.
I expect a full report by next week.
We'll see.
Yeah. It's awesome.
I think it could work. So I've got some drawings I'll throw up. I'll put them in the show notes, of course. But I would love nothing more than to see something new come out of aggressive skate mounts. I think that it is a different time. I think that people really like skating bigger wheels. I think flat 72, as I've found in my Aeons, is amazing. I think there's potential for even more innovation with frame technology, and I think that the UFS standard needs to be updated to accommodate that.
Yeah.
Well, just in the last couple of years, I mean, how many different types of frames have come out from all sorts of different places with, I mean, we have anywhere between 3 and 5 wheels now.
Yep.
You know, anything from, 55 to 125.
Yep.
So it's like anybody can do anything now. Like, absolutely. And people are willing to try things. I think that's what's great.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like it's not just, oh, Danny Rocker, it's stupid.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely. That's,
right. I was trying to imitate you, Ben.
Yeah, you do a good Ben impression.
I heard it.